Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games, board game design, gaming, gaming as a hobby, all that stuff, all in one beautiful podcast. And today is one of our weekly scheduled episodes where we talk about a single board game. We get into the gameplay, how it's played, the strategies that you might employ if you play this game, and then we'll talk about how it was designed. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about The Networks, designed by Gil Hova and published in 2016 by Formal Ferret Games.
Okay. So just to give a brief description of what The Networks is all about, in The Networks, players are the heads of a TV network in charge of managing the network's late-night primetime lineup across five seasons. Players take turns signing stars, booking ads, and scheduling shows in their three-show lineup time blocks. At the end of each season, players score viewers based on the show, how long they've had it, and which ads and stars are assigned to those shows. At the end of five seasons, plus an additional season of just scoring viewers, the player who has the most viewers wins. So that's the short of it. You are a network. You are booking shows for your primetime lineup and earning viewers, and the player with the most viewers wins. So let's get into the details of The Networks and the gameplay and the strategy involved.
So to talk about the strategy, I want to expand on a rule real quick, or not really a rule, just sort of a mechanic, is that when you buy a show to add to your lineup, there's a couple things that happen. First, you typically pay money to sign the show, and then you put it into one of your three time slots. And every show has a preferred time slot where it will get more viewers in that time slot than any others. And additionally, when you sign a show this way, you need to attach a star or an advertisement, or maybe not, depending on which show it is. But most shows require one or the other.
Shows will have a prerequisite that you attach either a star or an ad to it sometimes. Other times, it won't be required. It will be optional. But that means that you have to have a star or ad in your green room, which is where you hold all the cards that you haven't used yet. You need to have them there as soon as you purchase the show so that you can immediately attach it to them if they have a prerequisite.
Right. And stars are required for most of the different types of shows. I believe there's only one, like, category of show that requires ads.
Well, that's reality shows, because they don't typically have stars. If you think about, like, conventional reality shows, they make stars. They don't hire them.
But stars do cost money.
Yes.
And so there is sort of a chain of resources, and you almost always want to make sure that you end a season with one of each of those in your green room.
So real quick, I want to go over the actions, like the actual actions of the game, so people understand what you're doing specifically in this game. So a season is a round of turns, the end of which, after every player has decided that they're done taking actions and they would do an action that is called dropping and budgeting, which I'll explain in a second. That's the end of a season once every player has done that, and that's when viewers are scored for that season. So during a season, players take turns one after the other, performing a single action on each of their turns, and those actions usually involve acquiring a card. So the cards that you can acquire are shows, which cost money to acquire, and you have to have ads or stars in your green room in order to acquire certain shows so that you can meet their prerequisite. Then you can also acquire stars as an action on your turn, which also costs money. Those go to your green room as soon as you acquire them, and then they will be attached to shows later. Ads also go to your green room, but they give you money when you acquire them. And then the last kind of card that you can acquire is called a network card, which is sort of like a one-time use action card. Sometimes it does an action when you acquire it, like it gives you money or viewers just from acquiring it. Other times you have to use it at a later point in the game. For example, there is a network card that says you get to retain the stars from a show that you replace in your lineup. Because when you replace a show in your lineup, it goes into your reruns and then your archives, and the stars go with it. So you lose the option of using those stars in other shows unless you have this network card to prevent that. And then other network cards will give you like bonus points at the end of the game. So those are the four kinds of cards you can acquire as an action. The other actions you can take is you can take an action to attach a star or add to a show that has the space for it, but it was optional for you to have attached them when you acquired the show. So you, if you didn't attach them when you acquired the show and they still have the space for it, you can spend an action to attach a star or add from your green room. So that's like, if you can imagine taking a turn to acquire one of these shows that doesn't require you attach something immediately to it, you can acquire that show, slot it into a time slot, then next turn acquire a star, then next turn attach the star to the show now. So it kind of like lets you have access to that show sooner, just so that nobody else can take it from you. The other actions that you could, the last action you can take is to drop and budget, which means that you are sort of passing your turns for the rest of this season. And what happens is you remove your little marker from the turn order track and you place it on another tracker that on the high end will give you a lot of money or viewers, and on the low end will give you a very little amount of money or viewers. And it's kind of like a first come first serve thing, where the first person to decide that they are done taking actions for the season will have, they will get the biggest reward for doing so, which is usually somewhere around $8 million. And all the money in this game is counted in millions. So that's really just like $8 in the game, but they have fun because we're big fancy networks. All right.
Yeah.
So you were saying about preferred seasons and managing and keeping the prerequisites available to you at the end of seasons.
Right. Because when you get into the next season, like, obviously that's when you'll deal out new stars and shows and everything mm-hmm. for people to draft from. But that's the only point during a season where new ones will be added to the, you know, pool of available ones.
Right.
And since shows are the thing that give you the most viewers and the thing that help you win the most, you want to be able to get the ones you want as soon as possible.
Right. Especially part because of that, so at the beginning of a season is when the board is restocked, kind of like in trade row games. The trade rows are restocked like every time somebody buys something. In this game, it's only restocked at the beginning of every season. So, and when it's restocked, there's only like one ad per player. There's a little more than one star per player. And there's one less show than there are twice the number of players. So that means that if everybody buys shows, one player is only going to be able to buy one show. And so having the prerequisites available to you at the beginning of a season is important, because typically at the beginning of a season, people are just buying up all the shows in the game. And if you have the prerequisites available to you, then you don't have to waste any turns in between acquiring shows to meet the prerequisites of other shows. You just buy one show and then you buy the other one right away. Right. If you can't do that, then that means there's a chance that you are the player that's left out of being able to buy two shows that season.
Right.
Or, and like you said, you may just, even if you don't have the prerequisites for any shows, then that means you won't even be able to get like your first choice of show, and you'll have to get something else.
And the getting your first choice of show can be pretty important, not just because shows give you more viewers in certain time slots, but when you get your third and fifth show of a single category, you get like a bonus, like a suit bonus.
Right. And we talk about how if you can take extra actions on a turn, like as if you had taken an extra turn, that's extra tempo. And that means you're getting ahead of your opponents. This is pretty much one of the only places in this game where that happens.
Right. Because when you get your third show of a category, you can either choose to, I believe it is, look at the top three stars of the deck of stars mm-hmm. and keep one for free and put the others back on the bottom of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can choose to look at the top three adds of the add deck, get one, and then get the signing bonus for the other two, which is mm-hmm. the money you would get when you just get the advertisement. And we talked about how, like, you want these prerequisites to get shows. These are both prerequisites that you can get when you get a show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even more important to get this extra turn type of thing.
So big part of this game, like we're talking about, is the setup of, like, setting up your turns ahead of time so that you are setting yourself up for success. But then another part of the strategy of this game is, like, planning for the payoff. So, or sort of, how do I explain this? Like, the way that the cards earn you points is that every show has four season point values to it, starting with the first season that you acquire it, and then going down to the fourth season that you have the show if you keep it around for that long. And each season will give you a different number of viewers. And usually the first and second seasons are the most points, especially if you're able to slot the show into its preferred time slot. And then the viewers will fall off for the third and fourth season. So part of this game is acquiring shows that you either know that you have to replace next season, or acquiring shows that you know that you can sit on for two or three seasons before you have to replace them, because you know that they're going to give you enough points to sustain you, or to make it worth it that they're taking up your time slot.
Right. And even then, like, when you replace a show, you get a tiny bit of viewers for replacing it.
It'll a tiny stay bit.
The bottom left. Yeah, they're rerun viewers.
So, I mean, and in that way, you can kind of consider a show that, like, if you're acquiring a new show, not only should you look at how many viewers it's going to give you for its first season, you should look at that plus the rerun views from the last show. And if that is more than the current viewers you're getting from the last show, then you should replace it.
Yeah.
So factor that into your calculations, I guess, is kind of what we're saying there.
Right, yeah.
I mean, also consider the fact that you're only going to, at most, get two shows, likely, every season. Sometimes there's an instance where, like, all other players are trying to just stock up on stars and ads, so they might neglect buying shows for the first few turns. And you might have the chance of getting, like, three shows, but that's usually never going to happen. It's pretty much always going to be either one or two shows every season you're acquiring. So,
yeah.
So if you think about it that way, you have three time slots. That means that there's always going to be one show that you don't replace, and maybe even two shows that you don't replace from your lineup in any given season. So just planning, like, for if you have two shows that you're planning on replacing with a new show this season, you should probably replace the one that doesn't have the longevity, just in case you need to keep the other show around for an extra season than you planned.
Right. Additionally, at the end of the game, after the fifth season happens, you score your shows again and move it down another season for each show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Because just to explain the mechanic here, you have the four season viewership counts. You have a little black cube that you place on the first season as soon as you acquire the show. And then after you score the first season, you slide it down to the next season's point values, and then the next one, and then the next one. So, yeah. So when you say you score an extra season after the fifth season, that means you're just moving the cube down one more slot and scoring again on all of your shows.
Right.
So now that you mentioned that, knowing that there is this extra season at the end of the game makes the end of your third turn very important, because you can only replace so many shows in a season. So very likely, one of the shows that you acquire during the fourth season of gameplay, so the fourth turn of acquiring new shows, one of the shows you acquire then is going to stick with you till the end of the game. So it's very important to keep that in mind on that turn. And it's very important to keep that in mind on the turn before, just so that At the end of your third turn, you have all of the prerequisites you need so that on the fourth turn, you get your first choice for the show that you're going to keep for the rest of the game.
Right.
So, we should say that the best shows to get for the last season are sports shows because they always have the strongest third season.
Yeah.
I think over most shows, sports shows will have like the strongest third season. In addition to that, you're going to want to have, okay, there we go. Make sure the audio is working. Okay. So you're going to want to have an ad that gives you viewers at the end of the third season.
These are called promos in the game.
Yeah. So there's different kinds of cards within each card category. Like there's stars that will give you, that will have like a prerequisite. They have to be attached to a certain kind of show in order to grant you more points. And then there's ads called promos, which you have to pay money as when you attach them to a show, or else they don't give you very much. They just give you some money back at the end of a season. If you can pay the cost for a promo, then they will give you viewers in addition to ad money. And you getting viewers from an ad is very important because we talk about like how you can break parity in games a lot of the time. And this is one of those ways, because if you can assume that everybody's acquiring the same number of shows, or the same shows and the same stars, and they're all getting relatively the same number of points, you break parity by also getting viewers from your ads, which is a rare thing.
Right. And additionally, when you have stars on a show, you have to pay money every season to keep them. Mm-hmm. Or not, yeah,
you have to pay money every season. It kind of cut out.
And these promos don't even require you to pay money. They give you money for keeping them around.
Mm-hmm.
So that also breaks parity, because instead of being down $2 every time a new season happens, you're up $3.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's like you're actually up $5 from everybody else.
Yeah, you're up resources and you're up viewers. And you want one of those for the end of the third season, because you want to get as many viewers out of that ad as you possibly can. And you're not going to get that by attaching it to a season 2 show that you're going to replace before it gets to its third season. Like, if it gets to its third season, then you're probably behind on points, because the shows that you can get in season 2 give you significantly less points than the shows you can get in season 4.
Exactly.
So in summation, our strategies for this game is to set yourself up for success, have the prerequisites. We should also talk a little bit about when you should drop in budget, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was two other points I wanted to make about strategy.
Oh, okay. Well, this is also part of the strategy. Okay.
Yeah, this is one of them, actually.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, so yeah. Dropping and budgeting. So that's when you cease taking actions and you take some money. So this, we talked earlier about performing multiple actions on a turn, but this is kind of interesting because this is saying like you're done taking actions, and it gives everyone a chance to take more actions. If you're the last player left, that means you can just take all of your actions to collect all of the cards that are left, like all the stars that didn't get bought, all the ads that didn't get acquired.
And in a way, if you are part of the last two players left, it creates this mini game of, you know, both players, it's in their best interest usually to try to do this, because the difference between dropping second to last and dropping last is very minimal.
Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that the person who drops last does not have the option of getting viewers from dropping and budgeting. Everyone else, everyone but the last player to drop in budget has the option of taking money or viewers. And sometimes taking viewers is the right move, because like the dropping first gives you 5 viewers, and that's like the smallest sum to care about in this game is 5 viewers.
Yeah. It's like, that's one good star.
Mm-hmm. But dropping and budgeting, well, it's one of the only ways to get money in the game other than collecting ads. Ads give you very little money. Like, they give you anywhere between $1 and $3 to acquire them, and then at the end of a season, when you're budgeting your shows. You have to pay for some of the shows. They have an upkeep cost, and the ads will give you money to help pay for that, and then you get the difference, or you have to pay the difference, whichever it is. But right. it's always small increments with ads. But dropping and budgeting, like if you're the first to drop in budget, you can get $8, which is significant, because that's enough for a show and an ad, or maybe even two shows.
Right. But like the last person to drop gets $2, and the second to last person to drop gets $4.
Right. So
that can, yeah.
So dropping and budgeting at the end, you know, people will drop when they need the money, I think, in this game. And then mm-hmm. the people who don't need the money will kind of stick around and do their actions and whatever. I think maybe just one thing to say is you want to try to end a season with at least $5 million. That's the minimum you want at the end of a season. So that's after you've paid for your shows and collected ad revenue. $5 million is the least amount of money that you should have, just because the most expensive shows cost $5 million. So you want to be able to buy any show you want on your first turn. So you should have at least $5 million. But, you know, if you had your way, you should want to end with about $8 million at the most, or at the least, really. That's like the most comfortable amount of money you can end a season with. Just because that means you can buy a show, and then maybe you can buy a cheaper show, or you can buy a star that you need with that much money.
Right.
So those are kind of, I guess, rules of thumb. Like you want to at least have $5 million after every season, but you want to shoot for about $8 million.
Okay. Yeah.
And then did you have one more thing you want to talk about strategy-wise?
It was that it is definitely a viable strategy to spend season one doing more so of like preparations for the rest of the game.
Yes, I agree.
Because shows in season one do not give as many points as mm-hmm. the rest of the shows throughout the game. And I mean, like, obviously getting one show in season one is pretty good, but I think it's definitely worth it to look at the stars and the advertisements and get the best ones there first, because it gives you like a safety net.
Right. So the shows are divided into separate decks depending on the seasons that you draw them and have the chance of acquiring them. So season one shows are their own deck. Season two and three shows are mixed together in another deck. And then season four and five shows are mixed together in another deck. So, yes, there's a big difference between the shows that you can get in two versus the shows that you get in one, because they're separate decks and they're like significantly better than the shows in season one.
Yeah, and oftentimes the views you would get for having two shows from season one is not worth the resources that you're missing out on.
Right. Well, I was going to say that the stars and the ads are all mixed together in one deck. Like, all the stars are mixed together in one deck. They're not separated by seasons. So that means the stars and the ads that you can acquire in season one are just as good as the stars and ads that you can acquire in season five. So you want to spend your time in season one getting those cards, because they have like a strong power level, I guess, compared to the shows in season one. Especially if you can have the opportunity to acquire one of those ads that gives you viewers, which are also important in this game, in my opinion. So getting these good resources.
Yeah, last game we played, I believe two of those promos appeared in season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we bought them right up.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so let's talk about the design of this game.
Yeah, this game has pretty interesting design in a couple different ways.
I mean, first of all, I want to say that this game doesn't really... I like the way that the little cube components for tracking the viewers of seasons works out a little bit. That's kind of like a clever use of components in this game. But other than that, this is just kind of one of those games where you acquire cards and put them in front of you.
Right.
So I think the gameplay and the way that the components interact aren't like up there for this game.
Right.
But this game does a lot to make an environment where you do have to do a lot of planning.
Right.
So, but it's a pretty simple game, so the planning isn't that intensive.
Right. So part of what I like about this game is there is a clear, like I said, there's a clear chain of requirements. But the inverse of this is the chain of value. So shows have the highest value, but the most prerequisites. stars are the next in value, but also have the next highest amount of prerequisites.
Being
and then
money.
Ads, yeah. And then ads kind of feed into everything else because they give you money, but mm-hmm. they're also the lowest in value in terms of like how much an action gives you in terms of points and rewards.
Right, because oftentimes they're not going to give you any viewers.
Right, and we talk about like how to balance things based off like a formula, or like if you think about an action or a card in a game, giving it a baseline. Like, this is around how much points or money it should be worth in going up the chain. I think that this very clear line both lets the designer balance the different cards very easily, but also it helps players plan ahead, because there's a lot of games that are like engine building games or economic games where it's easy for a player to not know what they have to plan for. Or like not know how they should plan for what they want to do. And I think this at least very quickly makes it clear to the player that this is the chain of command in terms of all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also helps that, well, for one thing, like thematically it makes sense because shows are the big deal for any TV network, and then stars on the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then the advertisements are like an afterthought to the viewer, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely flavorful. But yeah, I do really like the point that like playing this game for the first time, you're kind of juggling between, man, I really want to do that, but I know I have to do this first. But like it kind of like pulls at you,
right?
Which way you need to go in order to have, you know, the most successful outcome for a turn.
Right. And this is another point, is that these sorts of like very simple economic games where there's only one resource and only a few funnels for that resource or things to spend it on, mm-hmm. these can very easily just become math games where it's very, you know, where like you can easily figure out what the optimal path is and then do that. You know, it's easy to solve.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the player interaction, especially the first come first serve kind of card drafting, adds a lot of the tension and like the wrenches thrown into it that you need for a game like this.
Definitely, they give you like the least number of things possible. Like you're butting heads with people all the time over these cards, even just from like the first draw. Like oftentimes people are probably going to be looking at the same cards, and I think it's kind of funny, they give you three shows to start with that each just give you zero viewers, and you know, you're gonna replace those immediately. But you talked about the three of a kind suits that you bonuses that you get from getting shows of the same kind, and everybody has the same three kinds of shows to start with. Everyone starts with a show that has no type to it, and then a sports show and a reality show. So everyone is already kind of butting heads over sports and reality shows from the beginning, trying to acquire those quicker to get that three of a kind bonus.
I actually don't think there are any sports or reality shows in season one. Because those are the unique ones. Sports have the higher end game payoff, and reality needs advertisements. Not stars.
You're right. There's no sports and reality shows in season one. So I guess maybe it's like it starts out with one thing that people might butt heads over in a later season, and then season one will establish what your other suit is that you're trying to go for. So it gives you a clear avenue, and then a couple other avenues that you have a head start in.
Right. And so I think not having those starting cards or starting genres in season one actually helps players not feel too intimidated. Like, there's not as many harsh blows in season one where like,
mm-hmm.
oh, first player got the only reality show in there. Now we're all at a setback and they're at a huge advantage. You know, with putting everybody at this even level for season one, I think it makes it a little easier or a little cleaner to mm-hmm. try to get through season one without feeling terrible. And mm-hmm. like you said, it also gives you a free platform to try to find your suit you want to go for.
Now, you also talk about how this can become a math game, but I think the way that the information is presented, that like the viewers shown for each season on a card are presented, this game has a lot of like set it and forget it mechanics, where you, it's kind of like a math game where you don't even have to do the math at all points of the game. You can just kind of look at something and check it real quick, just with a glance even, and then you could be like, oh yeah, that'll hold for two seasons, so I'll get that now, and then I'll just put my big star on it, whatever. It's only going to be two seasons, so I'll pick the star that has the highest two season bonus rather than three season viewership count, and then I'll slot it in, and then I don't have to think about it for two seasons, because I know that that was the best choice I can make for the next two seasons. I don't need to count on that number every turn. Like, it's a math game that doesn't ask you to do math until the end of a season.
This goes a bit into graphic design, which I think is one of the strong points of this game that I wanted to talk about. And so part of that, is that the information is both presented very clearly and very like distinctly, that it separates each season into, or on like the cards, on the show cards, each season separated into like a slightly different colored backdrop, and it helps you kind of keep track of that. There's not too many symbols, like there's no extraneous symbols or concepts presented,
right? Like, you know, the like only rerun symbols are the show, the rerun number, the symbol for stars and ads, and then the genre symbol,
right? And then the rotate symbol, which but I mean, like, that's it. There's very easy to keep track of everything. Also, this game, so I want to compare this to a point we made on the Agricola episode, that Agricola was also very harsh in terms of like having to budget making decisions and like getting resources or spending resources. This game has a similar aspect to that, obviously, but it's not as heavy on the player. Because the, for one thing, the colors used are very like bright, like, I guess not really pastels, but like sort of. And it's a comedic game.
I think they all have kind of the same, they're like a little desaturated colors, right? Is kind of how they are, but they're still kind of, they're still colorful,
right? Just but a little like desaturated. But like the game is like the art in the game is kind of cartoony. And it's all the shows are like jokes or parodies of existing shows.
Right. This is one thing I wanted to say about the game, is that this game, like the tone, not really, maybe not the tone, but like the approach reminds me a lot of Grand Theft Auto and like the radio stations and the TV stations there. And that the whole thing is just a big parody of show business. And, you know, every show in this game is a parody of another show. Like, I'm just going to flip through the cards. There's the Tiny Pop Hypothesis, which shows Albert Einstein on like a couch in an apartment. There's Flea, which shows the teacher from Glee running in fear. There is Flail.
I'm still a big fan of Communisty.
Communisty, yeah. Community, but communist. Agents of Shampoo, and Shampoo is like, like an acronym for something. Yeah, the cubicle, like The Office, but it's just takes place in one cubicle. Yeah, every show is just a parody of other shows. And the stars and ads also kind of follow that same vein.
Yeah, like the stars are just like archetypical celebrities.
Yeah, failed mayoral candidate is one of the stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think this has a very good effect. It's kind of therapeutic that like you can kind of get stressed out by the weight of some of your decisions, but then you look at the art and the jokes of the card and it's like, hint, kind of a silly game.
Yeah it's a silly game.
Also, I do want to say that the art of the game and the card design is very Monopoly-esque, which I feel like is its own subgenre of card of board game design.
I don't think I'd say that. Monopoly is more like kind of like the old timey, like addy advertisement kind of illustration.
I mean, it reminds me of like the cards of Monopoly, not the illustration, but the colors and the coloring and like the network cards especially are a white card with a pink like text box for the name.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think of like the properties in Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. The artwork of the game, like the actual illustrations of the game, kind of remind me of like illustrations for magazines, I guess. Like maybe if you open up like Entertainment Weekly and then there's a page about celebrities and they used illustrations for the celebrities instead of photos. Like these are the kinds of illustrations they would use. Yeah. Like they must have hired a guy that does magazine illustrations or something, but they're like good quality, like kind of caricatures, but they're not over the top or goofy. They're pretty plain and simple, pretty flat illustrations. Yeah.
So obviously again, talking about how stressful a game can be when it's asking you to do a lot of like important decisions. Another thing I like is that the rerun viewers that you get when you replace a show, they make it feel less bad when you do replace a show, because like if you replace, you know, something that might have given you 8 viewers on the end of that round, like it makes it feel like you're not just getting rid of something, even if mathematically like we would know that it's a better decision to replace it, it can still feel bad to a player when they have to get rid of something they invested in and they made a decision to choose. And like I said, that does that. Also, it encourages the desired play style of the designer, which is to constantly cycle out shows that aren't giving you as many viewers as a new one could.
Mm-hmm.
This very clear, like seasonal cycling through different properties and whatnot. Like if that's the play style that the designer wanted players to do, I think the giving viewers for reruns when you replace a show is a great way to encourage players to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. I like the mechanic in this game where the person in last goes first.
Oh, yeah.
Did we even mention that? No, we didn't mention that in the gameplay.
That turn order is the reverse of the points.
Yeah, and like, I don't think that's really something that affects gameplay. Like, or it's not something that affects your decision-making that much, I don't think. You'd rather... Right. Have the viewers and be out ahead than be the first person to go.
Right.
If you've set up your turns properly so that in the next turn you have all the prerequisite stars, ads, and money so that you can get any show you want, like even your fifth choice is going to be better than like having your first choice but not having the resources, or having your first choice but being in last. Because like, you know, your first choice isn't going to make up a 10 viewer deficit or even a 5 viewer deficit sometimes.
Right. So it's not something that affects decision making during a round as to like where you'll be on the next round. However,
it's a mechanic that a lot of other games don't actually have something like this.
And I think this actually does 2 things to the game. The first is that players who haven't been lucky throughout the game, either through like the random starting turn order or through just missing out on other stuff that other players got, they get a chance to catch up in the next round with their first choice.
Mm-hmm.
However, it also means that a player who is good at the game and is better than the other players has to wait out and let the other players take what they want before they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of balances skill level for like a gateway game type of style, but mm-hmm. in a way that feels natural rather than forced.
It also means that typically the person going first is the person that can drop in budget first.
Oh yeah.
So, cause if you can imagine, like every player pretty much wants to get one show, one star, one ad, maybe another show, and then maybe a network card. Every player wants to pretty much get the same number of things from a season. So, you know, if you're going first, then you have that better opportunity to drop in budget first. And that means if you're in last place because you're somewhat behind on viewers or money, then you can definitely make up for it just by dropping in budgeting first and getting those 5 viewers or that 8 million for the next turn. And even if you take the 8 million, then you might still be in last place for the next turn, so now you can actually use it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does a lot of good things to kind of smooth out gameplay and make it a little bit easier for a novice game player, a novice board gamer. And yeah, it doesn't show up in a lot of games. Like, you think of, like, Agricola, like we were talking earlier, the first player is decided by taking a space. Like, it's a worker placement game, so it's first come, first serve spaces on a board that you place your workers on to perform an action. One of those actions is going first, and other than going first, it lets you do, like, one other small thing, I think. So it's kind of like a worse thing to have to set yourself back, and it's really only for people who can afford to do that, who, like, are kind of already at an advantage and can spare a turn to just take the first player and even push their advantage further. In this game, it just automatically gives it to the person in last, which is kind of a nice thing. And like I said, it kind of smooths out the way that a game is going.
Yeah. There is one more point I wanted to make, which is that this game uses not only pretty small numbers in terms of, like, point values and money values, but it also uses very close numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a huge range. So, like, stars tend to give you 3, 4, or 5 viewers for, like, the first 3 seasons that they're on a show, and then the last one's, like, 1 or 0.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a 2 mixed in there. And yeah, like, shows tend to give you, like, 8 to 10, maybe 12 on the first season, 6 to 10 on the second, and then, like, 1 to 4 and 0 to 3.
Yeah, they just kind of, it felt like they just kind of shuffled the numbers around, but in usually they all add up to the same number of viewers in the end. So, like, yeah, any given star after 4 seasons will give you the same amount of viewers as any other star in the game.
Right. But what I like about this is, even though, like, the stars and the advertisements are technically random, it never really felt like I was completely ruined by the shuffle luck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a problem I have with Trade Road deck builders, is it can feel like that you shuffle the deck that has all the cards that will then go into the Trade Row, and you just get unlucky deals. But this game, I never really felt like that. I felt like, you know, every time I shuffled it, there was reasonable cards out there. And while there could be something said to having, like, you know, a higher swing or a higher variance in where the numbers are located, and, like, that might make for a more diverse game, I think in this case, again, it helps smooth out the turn order disparity.
Yeah, this is, overall, this is a pretty simple game that's pretty good for, like, a beginner game, beginner board gaming group. The strategies are not very intensive.
It's a pretty good gateway, like, economic management type of game.
I've heard games kind of like this called tableau builders. This is kind of a tableau builder, except you're not, it has very, very minimal, like, interaction with your quote-unquote tableau. Like, it's just, you're just using it as a tracker for point acquisition at the end of a turn. It's not really a tableau builder, but it's, yeah, it's like an economic game.
Yeah.
It's a
tycoon game.
Do we have anything else to say about design?
I don't have anything else to say about design, actually.
Okay. So should we wrap up the episode?
Similar games.
Oh, sure, yeah. Similar games. We mentioned
Agricola.
Yeah.
Which at least has a similar, like, weight to every action. But we did a whole episode on that if you want to learn more about our thoughts on that. Mm-hmm.
That was one of our earlier episodes.
Yeah. I do want to also bring up Food Chain Magnate, which we also did an episode on. That's another economic management sim type of thing that has an interesting usage of turn order in terms of how it manipulates gameplay and how it rewards certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The only other game that I have that I wanted to mention is Vegas Showdown, which is another game where, like, you have only one economic resource, but it is a first come first serve basis in terms of the stuff you buy, and then you place it on a casino instead of on a TV show network. But it has similar aspects of like set collection and all that, just instead of three slots, it's a two-dimensional grid.
Okay, interesting. And then I would also recommend Monopoly because it's like, you know, set collection and money and economics. Don't play Monopoly.
Yeah.
Play Vegas Showdown instead. That sounds pretty close to what this is, and way more friendlier than Monopoly, despite the name. Yeah. No, actually, Vegas is fun, all right? Monopolies are not.
Monopolies
I take it back. All right. So that's our episode on the networks. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you want, you can go to your favorite podcast listening platform, like us, leave us a comment. You could also follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast. BG Bros Cast? Yeah.
Yeah.
At BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, leave us some comments, chat with us, say what's up. We appreciate all the shout outs you guys give us.
I'm gonna try to start posting like questions, maybe. So like a question of the week on our Twitter account and our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask about what your favorite game of X genre is, or what your favorite mechanic is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
know,
and maybe
some fun stuff.
Maybe we'll do an episode on some of the stuff you guys talk about in those.
Yeah,
comments.
I'd love to do a viewer grab bag episode.
Sure, or listener. Just like do a week or do a month of listener top hits in games.
Yeah.
You can also go to our website at bgbcast.com. Don't put that at in there. Just go to bgbcast.com, and that's where we have all of our episodes posted and categorized with tags. So if you're looking for maybe our Agricola episode or our Food Chain Magnate episode, you can find the tag there, and then that'll take you to that game's episode where you can listen and hear our thoughts on those games, and
right.
See if maybe you're interested in trying them out sometime.
If you like websites, you can also go to entertainthegeeky.com, where
that's
our
a website.
Where our friends Chris, Roger, and Jason host their own podcasts, where they talk about nerd news, nerd topics, nerd media, just sort of general nerd discussions like you might find in a comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it is there that we are working ever diligently on getting our merchandise out. We're still figuring out the t-shirts, and like we've been saying, we'll keep posts and updates on our Twitter and Facebook pages about the status of that, as well as the status of Conniving Cooks, which is the game we will kickstart, but not yet.
Mm-hmm. So keep your ears and eyes peeled for that information. And until then,
I was going to say that I am streaming now.
Self-plugs.
Streaming. Well, duh. Streaming
self-plugs, I guess.
Yeah. Streaming video game playing and some game design as well. On twitch.tv/twack, that is TWAK, and if you come by the stream chat, say hi, it'd be really cool. I'm going to be streaming on weekdays at 11 to 1 central, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. central, so yeah, come check that out. Talk to me in real time.
All right, so is that it
for me?
Cool, then thank you for listening.
Thank you.